The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Good morning. It is Thursday, May 6th. You're listening to the College Football Daily. My name is Trey Scott. I'm joined for the first time ever in College Football Daily history by Patrick Brown of GoVols 24/7, one of several excellent Tennessee reporters we have on that site. I think the last time we talked Tennessee was Wes Rucker breaking down the palace intrigue of Jeremy Pruitt. And so what do we do for an encore? We bring in Patrick Brown to talk about a spring that I think went pretty well, all things considered, for Josh Heupel once the game had wrapped and all that stuff. Patrick, it felt like for a little bit there with Henry T out the door and Kavarius Crouch and the arrests of a few players, it felt pretty bleak in Knoxville, I thought.
Yeah, and Trey, I've been working here for 4 years, so I don't know why it took you guys so long to get me on this podcast.
It's only 2 years old. It's only 2 years old.
All right. So I don't need to go looking for somebody to blame just yet. All right.
No.
Yeah, it's been quite a tumultuous offseason for Tennessee, for sure. You had that one day in January where Henry Toa, Kavarius Crouch, Eric Gray, and Jameer Johnson, who was their starting left tackle, all went to the portal within about 15 minutes. They all popped in there right at the end of the day. And then the coaching change, NCAA stuff, it's been a wild, even by Tennessee standards, it's been a pretty wild few months. But spring practice was sort of a chance for Josh Heupel and his new staff to kind of settle down and get back to doing what they do, and that's coach football. And I think this spring for Tennessee's new staff was a lot about evaluation, a lot about sort of building sort of a foundation in terms of laying out what kind of culture you want in the program. For the staff, it was seeing what they have coming back on the roster. For the players, it was adjusting to a new staff, and a lot of it was sort of starting to, on offense, sort of establish an identity of what they're going to be. So there's obviously some challenges. This roster is not in great shape. They've had some more defections through the portal that were some younger guys that may not have moved the needle this upcoming season, but maybe long-term guys that were guys that could have been developed into good players. But they've also been active in trying to recoup some of the losses from the portal and bringing some guys in. So, and they still may not be done on that front. So the busyness will go on into the summer months for Tennessee.
Yeah, they added my guy, Juwan Mitchell, linebacker from Texas, led the team in tackles last year. Added Joe Milton, quarterback from Michigan, who at a certain point last year after Michigan's week one win against Minnesota was getting some baby Cam Newton comparisons, which I think is a lesson to us all, but also a testament to Joe Milton's potential in Knoxville. You mentioned the roster issues. I can't even believe I forgot Eric Gray and Wanya Morris when I was listing the Henry T. night with Kavarius Crouch. That was pretty bad. What are we looking at here? You said it's not very good, but I don't want you to pull any punches. Is this like close to Vanderbilt, South Carolina territory? Are we competitive with Kentucky? Can we be as good as Mizzou? Are we going to not lose by 50 to Alabama? Like, what are we thinking?
Well, it's a long way up to, I don't want to use the Moneyball quote where there's rich teams, there's poor teams, there's 50 feet of crap, and then there's the balls. I don't think it's that bad. But, I think on offense, they're really inexperienced and entirely unproven at really the wide receiver and running back positions. But they got some talent there, I think, some young players. They had a few four-stars at receiver in this last class, or the 2020 class with Jalen Hyatt, Jimmy Callaway, some of those guys. Bayless Jones is the guy they added as a transfer from USC last year that showed that he could do some things, but then his usage last season was really kind of puzzling. He could be a number one guy. The running back group is, they've got Jabari Small, who was the number three guy last year behind Gray, and Ty Chandler, who did some good things in limited action. They've got Tyon Evans, who was the number one junior college running back. They've got some pieces on offense. And in the offensive line, they've got a couple guys to replace. Obviously, this is Trey Smith. They got to figure out who's going to be the left tackle. But I think the situation on offense is a little bit better. Plus, you're having an offensive-minded head coach that Josh Heupel's put up points on the board just about everywhere he's been. You know, obviously, at Missouri, his first year, they were pretty bad on offense. In 2015, he comes in and they made a huge turnaround. Went from averaging, I don't know the numbers, but they were averaging 500 yards a game his first season there when they were barely scoring two touchdowns a game in 2015. So he sort of pulled off one of those things. So you kind of feel okay about the offense. I think the bigger roster question marks are on the defense, where There's virtually no depth. Even the position group that you probably felt best about was their defensive line. They got out of transfer and USC's Caleb Tremblay. And it's like, well, that was not a position you would think going into the spring that they would add a transfer, but clearly Rodney Garner coming over from Auburn, got a look at his guys in the spring and they went after a couple of other guys in the portal pretty hard too. They ended up going elsewhere. So that was clearly a position they felt they needed to upgrade. You mentioned Juwan Mitchell. I think he's going to come in and probably start right away. Tennessee was down to, for the last 3 weeks and for 10 of their 15 spring practices, they had 7 guys available at linebacker and 3 of those were walk-ons. One of them was a long snapper who played linebacker in high school.
No.
Now he was an all-state linebacker and he's a pretty good guy, but I mean, for the last 3 weeks, he's been in the 2-deep. So just sort of an odd situation there. That's why they needed to go out and get Mitchell. Obviously that situation with the low numbers was if 2 guys go in the portal, you have 3 guys get suspended for a couple different things. You have a couple guys not practicing because they're working their way back from injury. And then in the secondary, the top line guys are pretty solid. Tennessee secondary wasn't very good last year. You think can you get those guys playing better? That'll help. But behind them, there's really not much depth. So I would say the defensive roster is in a lot worse shape than maybe the offensive roster, where you can at least look to some young players that haven't played a lot, that have some talent, that kind of did some good things, flashed a little bit in the spring. So I would say it's mid to low level SEC East, right? I think, I don't know what should we say about Kentucky's talent level. They just had 6 guys drafted and Missouri had 5. So, and Tennessee was down there with 2. So it's not probably comparable to what Jeremy Pruitt inherited. They had 2 top 15 classes in this class before it got kind of gutted too, with some guys getting out of their letters of intent. That class was around the top 15 mark too, but I think it's probably comparable what Pruitt inherited. At some positions, it's okay. Other positions, the top line guys are okay, but not, there's no depth. So it's, and again, you have 20 something guys enter the portal and some of those guys were seniors who in a normal year would have just been moving on anyway. So it's sort of kind of hard to measure it that way. But you look at the guys they lost in that 2019 class, we talked about Toa Toa, Juan Morris, Gray, Key Lawrence was another guy that went to Oklahoma who was their top ranked guy. In 2020, Martavius French was a 4-star linebacker that just went in the portal last week after having an off-field issue. So it's a roster that it would be in the mid-60s numbers-wise scholarship in terms of scholarships, if not for they have about 10 guys, 10 seniors who are coming back for their extra year. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how depleted this roster has been depleted by what's gone on over the past few months.
It's interesting you say that how they were in a way – I mean, obviously they were just crushed by the transfer portal and the expectation when the players were transferring that they would have the 1 year, and they obviously got it. But to be saved from the mid-60s, which is Kansas level stuff, and we see how long that rebuild's taken up there. I mean, that's at least pretty good. Wasn't the spring game kind of fun though? I got some encouraging vibes from it. Maybe it was just like loss of a lot of touchdowns, but I thought spring ended on an okay note.
I think that was probably intentional. I think they probably told Tim Banks, the defensive coordinator coming over from Penn State, to not run any blitzes, play basic, don't do anything catchy or anything, and just sort of let the offense sort of display itself. Because another aspect of this takeover for Josh Heupel and his staff is that, I mean, they took over in late January. They're dealing with the NCAA stuff. There are a lot of other teams that are pointing that out to the guys that Tennessee's also recruiting. They're behind the 8-ball. They've not really, even Heupel and some of the assistant coaches that have talked this spring, we're like, yeah, we're definitely behind. They're not hiding behind it, but they're also, I think, working pretty hard to sort of catch back up. And that's all you really can do. But the staff, I think, believes that the way this offense plays, and if anybody's watched UCF over the past 3 years, it's an exciting offense. They go fast, spread the field out wide. They got the receivers, one's on the numbers, one's on the sideline. I mean, it's pretty wild when you kind of saw it from up top and watching it in the press box. I watched a little bit of UCF, a couple of UCF games back around February after Heupel got hired, and it was a little bit slow, sort of see it out there in person, to see the splits, see the way they play. I think you can take some confidence if you're a Tennessee fan that they're going to put up some points pretty quickly. There may be some games where they just struggle. It may be a struggle early on as they sort of get used to it, but you got to feel confident that this staff, they have a system. Heupel brought 4 guys that were with him at UCF, so they know how to coach it. They know how to implement it. I think they've done a good job sort of getting used to it has to be sort of a mindset. You have to sort of live it, breathe it. You can't just go out there and play it. You got to kind of think that way all the time. I think they did a good job making some progress along that front during the spring. But yeah, you saw some downfield shots. They were throwing the ball down the field. They were going fast. You didn't get to see everything that they're going to do. And Heupel said after the spring game that they still have a lot of the playbook to install, which kind of goes back to what I said earlier, that they were really just sort of trying to see what they have on both sides of the ball, but on offense as well. the spring game, you know, the quarterbacks look good. That's obviously the big question mark that I sort of didn't touch on earlier is, I guess now with Milton, they've got five different quarterbacks in this quarterback room and pretty much a free-for-all. It's pretty wide open. I don't think they'll have five quarterbacks on the roster by the time they get to the preseason. But, yeah, you definitely did see some good things, and I think that was by design because, like I said, I think the staff believes that this offense, once it's out there and once everybody sees it, they think it'll recruit some big-time guys, some big-time skill position players. They obviously just got pretty good quarterback in Taven Jackson for this 2022 class. That was a really big pickup. A four-star out of Indiana. So they kind of wanted, I think the spring game was sort of by design to sort of showcase this offense. They, hey, we're going to be exciting. We're going to be sort of new age. And I know the national reaction was Tennessee's offense has been terrible for the last 4 years. And now look, it's exciting. They may not win a bunch of games, but it might be a lot of 45, 35 games that are at least entertaining. So, but yeah, I think there was some good vibes from the spring game just because the offense looked like it was going to be sort of maybe as advertised with what Heupel is bringing in from what he did at UCF and Missouri.
Yeah, that was my vantage point. I was pleased to see the offensive evolution, I guess. And I know it's going to be a long rebuild. I wonder though how fans, and I live in Nashville and I see this quite a bit. And I guess I'm on coach number, I guess it's only three. Coach number three. Well, technically maybe four, if how long you consider Greg Schiano's tenure in Knoxville. But coach number three officially.
Since you had to bring up Schiano, here, didn't you, Trey?
Yeah, of course. No. I'm never going to not bring that up. But so coach number three. And each coach hits a certain point, and Heupel hasn't hit it yet, where the hype is just too much too fast, and then it all comes tumbling down. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Josh Heupel. Do you think the fans, are we bracing them? Because you're bracing me. Are we bracing them over at GoVols 24/7? Are we bracing them for patience and a multi-year thing? Because you got the NCAA hanging over Tennessee's head. This is not going to be the traditional first class top 15 thing that we're used to seeing, especially in the SEC. This is a class right now with just three commits, and I'm sure the dead period ending in June will be very good for Josh Heupel and his staff. But I would imagine, Patrick, like we gotta go rather slow here, or we're gonna have another circumstance where one loss turns into two, and then all of a sudden we're screaming rock bottom in year two of a regime.
Yeah, it's the problem with bracing a fan base for this is that this is not the first go around, right? You said this is like your third or fourth coach. I mean, it's not that Heupel is taking over a program that was bad this past season. This program has been bad for 10 to 12 years now, and it's been at times sort of a national laughingstock with some of the stuff that's gone on. We don't need to rehash all that here with Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, kind of what went on with you know, Pruitt this past season, some of the things that sort of made Tennessee a punchline, you know, the coaching search that resulted in Pruitt. That's what any coach that was going to take this job in late January with the NCAA cloud, that's what they were going to be stepping into. And I don't think really Heupel, I don't know that he's really bothered by it too much externally. I think that was a problem. You know, obviously, Butch Jones got caught up too much in what the perception was. And I think that detracted from what he was trying to build and got started off on a good path there in 2015 and that 2016 team that sort of fell short of expectations. But yeah, I think most Tennessee fans, they're tired of losing. I mean, they like I said, this has been a decade long struggle, a decade long wandering in the wilderness. And so, you know, but I think the reaction to Heupel has been, it was a little mixed, a little bit reserved at first. You know, they saw a coach that took a team that was coming off an undefeated season. They won their first 12 regular season games back in 2018, right? And then last season they went 6-4. Last season was weird for everybody. I think that sometimes gets lost, but I think they started to sort of warm up to what Heupel is doing. He sort of changed a lot of things about the program. You see Tennessee's Twitter account posting videos of them playing dodgeball after a workout, you know, after the spring game on Monday. I guess it was last week. They're out there playing softball as a team, players versus coaches, just. And as a fan, you probably, you know, you want to see wins, but you like to see that too, because last season was miserable for everybody in this program. And so you sort of like to see some of that upbeat stuff, some of that sort of that different vibe that, you know, you see on social media, you hear players talk about when they talk during the spring. So, and then they started, you know, they bring in some guys that, in the transfer portal, and obviously with Taven Jackson as well. I think that was an important guy to get after what happened with Ty Simpson early on. I think pretty clear, and I do think we braced fans for during the will they or won't they fire Jeremy Pruitt segment of the offseason, like, okay, if they fire him, some of these guys, there's going to be a lot of guys that leave, and they're going to be big names, and that happened. So, and you know, we sort of said that too with this in-state recruiting class, that, you know, the 2022 class in Tennessee is really, really good. And Tennessee has started out way behind on a lot of guys, and they're playing catch up with a lot of guys, and they're probably not going to get a lot of these guys. And I think we've raced. I think, you know, there's some early optimism. There's always optimism, Trey, right? Around the off season, you know, always. By August, Tennessee fans will be talking themselves into 8-4. You know, the schedule's not, it's not the hardest schedule. Obviously Tennessee plays Georgia, Florida, and Alabama every year. Those are three likely losses, you know, but then they play, you can talk yourself into some of those games being toss ups, right? Because they play South Carolina, they play Vanderbilt, they play Pittsburgh in week two. I think that's going to be a tough game. You know, what does Ole Miss look like with Lane Kiffin? What does Missouri look like? You know, even with Tennessee's roster situation the way it is, it's not a, you know, those Ole Miss and Missouri games are games where you're like, okay, this roster on the other side is way, way better than ours. Like it's going to be in those other three games. So that optimism will continue to build though. But I think this is a fan base that's sort of warming to what this new guy, this next new guy, he's the third or fourth. I can't even keep count of how many new guys this has been over the last decade. But yeah, so I came on in 2010. So I was in there the first Dooley season. So I already lost count. But yeah, I think they're starting to warm to it, but I also think they know in the back of their head, like this is not going to be fun. There's going to be some brutal Saturdays this fall, and there's going to be some brutal days over the next few months where, you know, this recruit that Tennessee really wants is going to pick somebody else. There's already sort of been that, you know, I mentioned Ty Simpson. There's been some other guys that are in-state guys that have been priorities for the former staff that the new staff just, they don't have time, you know, they can't build a relationship with these guys because they're talking to them over Zoom. They can't get them to campus. Obviously, that'll change next month. And if you're Tennessee's new staff, you hope that you can turn some of those face-to-face interactions that you've not had into maybe help that sort of help you catch up. But I do think Tennessee fans, I mean, they've been through this. They know it's not going to be easy. But that's also the hard part of it, is because you've been patient for so long. It's kind of hard to ask them or expect them to continue to be patient because they've been doing that for a decade plus now.
Look, I just want you to know, I was going to end this conversation by saying, like, mark your calendars, October 16th, Lane Kiffin comes back to Knoxville. And then you said there are going to be some brutal Saturdays this fall. And I just started like laughing over here. I was like, man, Tennessee, like.
That could be a brutal game for the scoreboard operator.
Yeah, no, you're right. They, there were some brutal Saturdays last fall. There have been. I'm rooting for Tennessee. I think a lot of the college football media has enjoyed watching it be kind of a mess, but at the same time, we are all ready for Tennessee to be good again. It's one of those programs, Patrick, you know, just like a Texas or a Nebraska, that it feels like the sport's better when they're good. So let's get them up there. I appreciate that you're practicing patience and preaching patience as well. Make sure you're following Patrick Brown on Twitter at pbrown247. Our producer is Lance Flynn. I'm Trey Scott. Everyone have a great Thursday. We will talk to you tomorrow for the next edition of the College Football Daily.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.